You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jay Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is an associate professor and developmental psychologist in the Department of Educational Policy and Leadership in the College of Education at Marquette University. Dr. Gabriel Velez is our guest. Good morning, Dr. Velez. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Thank you. I'm doing well this morning. Getting excited for Thanksgiving. The weather's a little crummy, but it's wintertime. So
yeah, hang on to your hat when you walk outside. It is a little crazy. But we thought what a great time to talk about teens and technology and even adults and technology. The day before Thanksgiving, when half of the table is going to be on their phones while you're passing around this stuffing and driving everybody crazy.
Yep, that is 100% right. And you know, I was out at a coffee shop this morning and I saw someone with Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, which is all about this topic. And I was thinking, you know, it's on people's minds.
It really is. I don't think we appreciate, Dr. Velez, just how damaging phones and social media are for all of us. Right?
Yes. And that's where it begins. You know, I think there's so much focus on youth and on students and on schools and all that's right, but it really begins with us as adults. You know, I've talked to some young people. I remember in one of my classes we were talking about some of these issues and questions, and they said, you know, our teachers are telling us ban your phones, you know, put them away, you can't have them in school. And then they're like, they'll give us a worksheet, and then I see they're sitting there kind of like scrolling on some kind of app on their phone. And you know, I'm like, yeah, it's a challenge for all of us, but if we're going to focus on young people, we got to think about ourselves too.
And we're seeing now in Wisconsin, there's something in California now in Wisconsin, they want to ban cell phones in school. And I want us to open up, and if you're a listener, you know, I do not have children. I do not have children in school. So I feel like mine could be a very cut and dry, simple opinion is like, well, yeah, don't have the phones. Cause back in my day, .. But I mean, tell us what the arguments for kids having phones in school start there, because we have very much said like, yeah, we're going to ban phones in school. You don't need them. And it's a distraction. But there are people out there, parents, people who are not kids in school, who say it might not be the best idea, but are there a viable argument saying kids should have access to them aside from social media, which we're going to get to?
Sure. You know, I can almost group it into sort of three areas, I think. You know, on the side of the parents, right, and we've heard this before, there's the kind of concern around, like, if I need to contact my student, right, or if they need to contact me. And that, you know, is just, I think, tied into larger questions and issues where parents these days are more stressed about safety, about being in contact, and also, I would say, about surveillance of their students, right? Mm-hmm. So smartphones also allow for this ability to sort of track your student because you know it's on them, you know it's on. You say, oh, I should be able to get in touch with them. I think in the educational side, there's a bit of a case to be made to say that smartphones can facilitate certain types of learning, right? I mean, like any technology, it's a tool. And so it's a little bit of how you use it. You know, I, in my class, for instance, sometimes have students doing in-classroom polls where they pull up their phone and they use a QR code that they see on the screen and they can contribute some thought relatively anonymously that we then see, you know, on the board kind of in front of us. And then the third part that I would say as a developmental psychologist that we don't talk about enough is that we're meant to sort of use schools to teach young people about how to use things well and healthily, right? I mean, think about this with like peer conflict, right? One of the great parts about schools is if we do it well, we can teach young people how do you engage when you've got a conflict with, you know, your friend, with an adult, with someone else. And I do think there's a case to be made that phones are a real huge challenge, but we could also structure teaching kids about like, how do you engage with this healthily? How do you use it as something that's going to benefit you rather than something that's just constantly distracting you or tapping into sort of your mental health in a negative way?
You make such a good point though, Dr. Velez, about this is a tool. Now let's learn how to properly use this tool so we don't injure ourselves with said tool, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I think the challenge there becomes, you know, we say tool, we think of like a hammer, right? And to some degree, you know, there's a company out there producing a hammer for us to use, but it's not producing a hammer that will sort of be constantly drawing our attention and constantly pulling at us, right? And social media and smartphones are set up by companies that are making money off of our attention. So it's, you know, it's a tool, but it certainly is, you know, a little bit of a different one.
I think there's an important point you're making there too, is, you know, it's the adult's responsibility, where we're talking about, you know, mentors, teachers, or parents to teach kids how to make it in the world using the tools they have available to them. And I think that then puts a responsibility on those older folks to understand how those young people use these tools, because people who are Gen Z were born into cell phones, born into tablets. They probably don't know a life before that. And it takes the responsibility of the adult up higher to understand what they're going through, to say, this is what you need to do. Because we had a slide presentation that was sent that you use that says, basically, when adults try to teach kids, we're trying to teach them from our point of view and our experience. Well, go do X, because that's what I did, and that's what my dad and my granddad did. But guess what? That's not how it works.
It's not applicable anymore.
So kids aren't going to do it that way. They're going to find their own way. So it is up to the adults to say, I have to meet kids where they are too, to understand their struggles, their needs, and that what comes through these, whether it's social media, whether it's just the phone itself. I think it's not just about teens and technology. It's about how are adults part of the conversation and being responsible as well.
Yeah, 100% yes. And I think, you know, too often we assume things about young people, and I love the efforts and initiatives you hear out there where they're leading the charge, mm-hmm. right? And like, there's a great organization in Milwaukee called Disconnect, which is about empowering young people to sort of take action around digital technologies and encourage other young people and advocate in educational spaces. And that's really beginning with them. And I think if we try and do things from top down, right, we're just going to end up in a world where they're sneaking their phones in their backpack, mm-hmm.
yes.
looking at them in the bathroom, and we're trying to police and surveil and all of that.
Yeah, when you tell a teenager not to do something, that frequently will have the opposite effect.
100%.
I know adults who are the same way. If you are just joining us, Dr. Gabriel Velez is our guest. He is at the College of Education at Marquette University, and we're talking about technology and all of us, not mm-hmm. just teenagers. Is there a certain amount of time, Dr. Velez, that we should limit ourselves to on our devices? Is it 3 hours? You're done. You know, 3 hours a week and you're done.
Yep. You know, that is the challenge with some of these things, is that I think we always are looking for the easy, clear cut, right? Mm-hmm. This comes, you know, about, like, I get the question often, you hear, like, what age should I introduce a smartphone to my child? And, you know, there's some great campaigns out there that say, like, wait until 8, because 8th grade is a nice sort of, like, direct cutoff. I do think, to that point, you know, it's not necessarily about limiting the time. I would say it's becoming aware of how we're using that time. And that's where we can use our phones, you know, and our tools and apps to our advantage, because there are lots of great apps and tools out there that will track your time. And I do this even sometimes myself. And so that makes me aware, my gosh, I'm spending, you know, X amount of time on my phone, or I'm opening it. You know, I've done that and I've noticed, like, I open it, you know, hundreds of times a day. And that just makes me aware, my gosh, like, I'm looking at my phone that often. And so, you know, I think rather than sort of box ourselves into one size fits all, I think it's just making sure we're attentive and aware of the ways and the time that we are spending in that. And then, you know, it's a bit of a challenge, but asking ourselves to reflect and say, is that how I want to be spending that time? Is it healthy for me? How am I feeling about that?
I thought there's an article in the Washington Post from this morning, Dr. Velez, that says, why constantly checking your phone can drain your focus and memory. You might underestimate how often you look at your device, and you might be paying a price with more attention and memory lapses. So we're getting dumber.
Dear Washington Post, shut up.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'll have to go look at that later. But sometimes, you know, you need this research that also tells you things we already know, right? Like,
yeah.
I doubt there are very few people that read that and said,
surprise!
That is groundbreaking. Yeah, you know, but we need that.
And I want to, you know, that topic of when to introduce a cell phone or devices or that digital world to your kid, you know, I think that also brings back what I was just talking about as far as not, I don't want to say the responsibility of parents. I don't want to tell a parent how to raise their child, but the opportunities to sit down and say, all right, you're going into 8th grade. It's time to get you a phone, or time to get you a device. let's have these conversations and talk about it, because I'm willing to bet that these cell phone bans that are coming through and people's attitudes, they don't take into consideration the children's opinions. Their opinions are valid on why they may or may not need them. You have to have these conversations and say, why do you think you need these for school? Okay, great. We'll do X, Y, and Z, but let's limit your screen time. Let's talk about what you're looking at. Be open and honest about these things, because I read an article in the JS, an opinion piece from a woman who, you know, she said from the moment she got her son an Xbox and a cell phone, that it was the slow decline into disappearing into the world of social media, where it's not real connections, and that led to drug use and that led to his death. And I'm not saying I'm going to go that far, but it is about being open to the conversation about what your kids are looking at when you introduce them, especially at such a young age, which seems like you almost, I have to imagine there's more pressure on parents to introduce digital devices than even for their children.
Yeah, I think you're really right. You know, so I have three young kids. I have a 7, a 5, and a 3-year-old. And, you know, one of the things that I feel very fortunate about is we're raising them in a world where actually we know a lot of other parents who are talking about this and are waiting to give their kids devices, right? And I
That's
think
great.
5, 10 years ago, that was not the case, right? It was much more likely that there were the parents who were giving the devices and you felt the pressure if you were saying, maybe we should wait and hold off.
Yeah.
You know, but the other point that you mentioned about that, Greg, is I think it's also just like critical that we're thinking about what's going on in the schools and there's communication across that, because, you know, I'm realizing my oldest son is getting more engaged with screens and technology at school than he is at home. But also then I'm reading, you know, a lot of schools are not really careful and thoughtful. Like we think that schools would have all these guardrails, right? But there's a lot of good evidence that sometimes kids are put in, you know, front of a screen and the teacher's going and helping some other student one-on-one. And there isn't actually a lot of oversight or control or sort of regulation around how that other student is using the screen.
That's so interesting though, Dr. Velez, that you're meeting more parents who are waiting to introduce that social media, because I can imagine, oh, you poor thing, you're one of Dr. Velez's kids. How sad for you. You don't have a smartphone.
Yep. Well, and then your kid is coming to you saying like, oh, but Johnny and Betty. Exactly.
Everybody
and,
else
know,
has one. Them. Yes. Why are we so odd?
Yeah. I feel like there was a time when this became more prevalent in children's lives. A lot of parents were like, you're not getting one until high school. And that was just the thing. You don't get social media. You don't need
it's
that.
Like getting your ears pierced.
And then it got younger and younger because they're like, oh, they've got games on here and they'll be entertaining themselves. And now, as you're saying, there's more thought into it. There's more possible damage. There's more research. So it's like, when is a good time to do this? We decide as a family, not by societal pressures.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Gabriel Velez on the other side. You can always join us if you have a question, call or text at 855-752-4842. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast statewide, countrywide. You can even pick us up around the world on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by Dr. Gabriel Velez, Associate Professor, Developmental Psychologist in the College of Education at Marquette University. And we're talking about our phones and us. And we had a couple texts come in, Dr. Velez, that I just wanted to share. John from Milwaukee says, I say ban phones for everyone. LOL. And Sue from Franklin says, we got our daughter a phone when she was 12 and we were pressured to hold out for that long. Mm-hmm. She still did great in school, but her reading test scores dropped over the next couple of years. And I think it was because she was on the phone more than she was reading like she used to. All worked out okay. She's now 27. She has her master's.
There you go.
So she came out on top, but it can be really detrimental for us. I saw a report earlier this week. We have 6-year-old girls now who are asking their moms if they're fat because of what they're seeing on social media. That's horrifying.
That, you know, the potential is what's scary, I think, too, right? You know, and I think if, you know, you're a parent out there and you're worried and you're getting super concerned, you know, any given individual young person, you don't want to just assume, right, all these bad things, right, that they're seeing pornography, that they're exposed to this, that it's going to destroy them. But when we look across our country and across, you know, lots of young people, it is affecting a lot of them negatively. And so it is something we need to be talking about, thinking about, and developing policies in schools and states and, you know, in these different ways.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think too, I think it's also particularly for young men who aren't getting out, who aren't socializing, who are building their whole world online.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I love that you bring that up because, you know, it's not happening in a vacuum. Right? That's the other thing we need to keep in mind. So there are pressures right now for being young men, and there are all sorts of other dynamics going on. And young people are feeling like less connected. And for boys in particular, that can be hard when they maybe also feel social pressures, emotional pressures, and then phones and video games and pornography too that they can access on these. Like, they go down a deeper hole. And so, you know, I think we need to be attentive, right, too, that it's not the same for all young people either. And so different groups, it's going to affect them in different ways.
I think something that I saw from the PowerPoint that our senior producer Tucker provided for us in our research is that also, you know, the two major things that hit me was, one, the discernible and trackable study that shows that kids are just getting less sleep too, and as well as the teens who meet up in real life every day, it's going down because, I mean, I won't lie, social media, I think in its infancy, in its most altruistic form, was here to connect us. And it has, there are definite positive attributes to how we can affect the world by being on social media. But there is a loneliness epidemic, and it's something that is, it's hit adults more, but it's, kids are almost growing up in it from the start. Just like they're growing up with social media and technology, they understand that it's, you're not truly connected. And this, you know, whether it's Snapchat, WhatsApp, it's not a real
relationship.
It's not a real relationship. And it can, you know, it can provide a lot of internal anxiety and problems, which kids are going through all the time.
Yeah. You know, Greg, that you had such a good point, because the other part about this is, you know, we're in a world where AI is taking off, and we're seeing more evidence that young people are engaging with chatbots like their friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of my concern, where exactly what you're describing, right? It's one thing if it's a real person that you're connecting with virtually and you're not getting the in-person connection. It's a whole other thing if it's virtual and
yes,
technology. And so, you know, that's where some of my fear comes. We're talking, you know, a lot about cheating with AI in schools, but we're not talking about the possibilities for young people sort of going to AI chatbots rather than friends or teachers or other real people and connecting in that way.
Well, and that's why I said, too, there is a concern about building an entire online world for yourself where you never have to go outside of that for human connection. You can have your AI best friend. You can have your girlfriend who's on OnlyFans. You can do all of these things without ever leaving your house, and you never have to actually get out in the world and have face-to-face conversations. And it's, you're missing so much.
Yes, yes. And the other part, and I gotta go back to my sort of background as a developmental psychologist, is relationships and in-person connection matter so much for so much of parts of development, right? Of growing, of learning, of becoming, you know, fully sort of functional adults and citizens. And so when I work with schools and teachers, you know, sometimes rather than focusing on what can we do about the technology, which can feel really overwhelming, I say, let's really double down on how can we build relationships, right? What can you do to make more in-person connections for yourself with a young person or for young people with other young people? And, you know, then it kind of has a little bit of a positive strength space to kind of like, how can we take this on?
I think that also brings back to the point of the responsibility of the mentor, the teacher, the parent. When we say there's so much going on in the world, they might look at us and say, like, what? Okay, take them out into the world. Show them what you love. Show them what's good out there. Don't just say, go out and play. Do something with them and expose them so they can understand, not just tell them that what they're doing is,
you know, wrong.
Yeah. I think once again, it brings forth the idea that in this conversation, the adults have to meet the kids halfway and understand as much as they can what they're going through and be a tool to help as they're trying to understand the tools in their lives.
I completely agree. And I think it's the same also for AI. Like you're just saying, you know, we can't just ban it. We can't hide it and not talk about it. We need to meet them there, understand why they're using it, how they're feeling, and think about, okay, how can we then lead them to a healthier, more positive outcome and engagement with it?
Dr. Gabriel Velez is an associate professor and developmental psychologist in the Department of Educational Policy in the College of Education at Marquette University. Such an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Velez. Yeah. Really, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you both. This has been great.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Yeah,
and
have a good one.
None of us will be on our phones tomorrow.
Oh, I will be.
All.
Oh, I will be.
Not yeah. Just put them away.
I will be.
We have news coming up next, and then we're going to lighten it up with some audio survey, and we're going to talk about toys.
Yeah.
That's coming up next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B.
There it is.
On the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text. The number is the same. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, we will be here tomorrow.
Live. In person.
Live and in person, live from Radio Park tomorrow from 9 to 11. So if you need some background while you're in the kitchen dicing celery and chopping up very expensive onions and all the other things, join us. We're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow. Pat Kreitlow is going to join us at 9:30.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a lot of Thanksgiving-related things, holiday-related things. It will be an upbeat, happy show.
It's going to be a special all-audio sorbet edition.
Pretty much.
I just said that. I didn't talk to Jane or Calvin about that.
Now that's what we're doing. Yes. So join us tomorrow morning from 9 to 11 if you are able. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Another reminder, 511wi.gov is that great website before you head out and hit the roads to check on road conditions that will show you where all the accidents are all over the state. And now I'm seeing them starting to pile up all over the place. North of Milwaukee, we've got some Lansing car ferry on Wisconsin 82 is closed because of high winds. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of stuff going on. Check out 511wi.gov. It's really a very useful resource.
And also we will be giving you a special pre-recorded, wonderful, brand new episode.
All new material.
Friday. So when you're listening to us on Friday, that is going to be pre-recorded, but we're going to have a good time. We hope you have a wonderful, wonderful vacation. Please, please, please be safe, especially if you're up there in the north woods of Wisconsin. Yeah. This is getting waylaid by snow, but yeah, be safe and have a great holiday. But we'll be here tomorrow. I'm just gonna have a really good time. Maybe a mocktail will be in order.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and by a mocktail, I just mean I'll just say I'm having a gin and tonic without the gin.
That would be tonic, then a glass of tonic
still counts as a mocktail.
All right. Also, a reminder: make sure you have the Civic Media app.
Why?
Because on Monday, we're going to kick off our multi-state grown-up gift list text-to-win contest.
Yeah.
You have a chance to text in a whole bunch of times throughout the day and pick up $200 in cash.
Yep.
That'll be handy.
Every time.
Every time. Yep. And then grand prizes. We have a grand prize, a snowblower, stainless steel cookware set, portable air conditioner, some very, very nice prizes. And all you have to do is listen.
Start your winter right with a portable air conditioning unit.
Well, we'll need that eventually. Yeah. But yes, it is going to start on Monday.
Yeah.
The contest starts on Monday. You have to enter via the Civic Media app.
Correct.
So go to your app store. It is
absolutely free.
And be ready for Monday so you can take part.
Contest goes until the 12th of December, to be the last day of Jane Matinair's radio career here at Civic Media, and just done. She's done. She's like, she threw down her headset one day. She's like, I'm out of here. And we're like, can you stay until the 12th? She's like, fine.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty much how it went
down. The next 2 weeks, we'll just be having fun. There'll be fun guests, maybe some surprises. But you want to stick around and listen and be a part of it. Let us know, you know, in those weeks, what Jane meant to you, what she means to you. Make her cry. When you give her compliments, she cries. But they're good tears. They're good tears.
It's not that hard to make me cry.
I've seen her watch a dog video.
I'm a squish. Okay, so anyway, yes, that's all coming up starting next week.
Yeah.
Our text to win multi-state contest grown-up gift list. Download the Civic Media app so you're all ready for that. This is the portion of the program we call Audio Sorbet, where we talk about lighter things Essentially, we
clean your ears with fun.
So this story I saw this morning, the famous toy maker, the man who invented the mouse trap and Light Bright mm-hmm. and so many other wonderful toys.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yes.
Robots.
Bert Meyer has passed away at the age of 99.
Yeah. Wow.
What a run. Yeah, but that started us talking about toys. And toys we loved as kids.
Yeah. Especially with the conversation we just had with Dr. Velez from Marquette University.
Right.
It's very easy and understandable to hand your kid a phone and say, play a game on your phone. Right. And they love it and they're having a good time.
Right.
But are there games that you grew up with that you still love to play, that you have great memories? And are these games and activities that you're handing down to your kids or grandkids? So like, you know, a puzzle, or maybe it's playing a board game. Like Mousetrap, which is super fun.
This Mousetrap is fun. So is Trouble.
Trouble is fun. Like,
but just for the Pop-O-Matic alone.
Anything with the Pop-O-Matic bubble, Trouble, Sorry, those two games, yes. There was one more. What was the other one? There was one more game that used the Pop-O-Matic bubble. I'm going to look that up right now. That was very 70s, 80s. There was a...
Was it a Pop-O-Matic craze? All Pop-O-Matics all the time?
I think so. I think because they always say it has the Pop-O-Matic bubble. So that must have been,
That was a draw.
Trouble, Pop It. They just, Pop It was called.
Never heard of that.
Yeah. There's a lot of versions of Pop It and Trouble. And I believe, I don't think Sorry had the Pop-O-Matic bubble.
No.
Okay, no. So it was just two games. It was two games.
That's why Trouble was, I could have just played with the Pop-O-Matic. I didn't have to do anything. Just play with the thing. What was your favorite game as a child? 855-752-4842. What did you love when you were a kid? Was it Sorry? Was it Monopoly?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Life? Which, did anyone ever finish that game?
No, it all finishes one place, Jane. Just one place. Greg on the live stream says, "How about Hi Ho Cherry-O?" I remember that game.
I do. What do we remember? Do you know how
it's like?
It worked?
You collect cherries in a bucket, and I believe so. I think that's what it was. Chutes and Ladders. I remember that one.
Chutes and Ladders. That's probably the first game most kids play.
I think so too. Yeah, Candyland.
Right? Board game.
Candyland is also another one. I remember Monopoly being a game we would play, but we would never play fully, because Monopoly is a very intense and can be a very dark game. So we just kind of took all the property stuff out. We would just try to go around the thing and try to collect money. And whoever had the most money won, which is not unlike Monopoly fully, but we were not investing in properties and then pushing rents upon people and trying to crush our dads at the game of capitalism.
Different kind of thing. We're talking about games, favorite games. After the loss of famous toy maker Bert Meyer, who designed Mousetrap, Light Bright, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, he passed away at the age of 99, served in the Navy, was an aircraft mechanic before graduating from the Illinois Institute of Technology with a batch in product design. His license plate read Toy King.
Love it.
And he said the Light Bright was the favorite of all the games that he worked on. Light Bright, I loved Light Bright.
I loved Light Bright too. I liked Light Bright as a kid because you could just do whatever you want. And then it's sort of like Lego. You can buy the paper that had the design on there and you can make the design how you see fit. You could just put the pegs in there and make whatever
make
you want.
Make your own thing.
But then there are people out there like, I took 3,400 Light Brights and I made a Frank Lloyd House. Right. I'm like, well, what am I even doing here then? Yeah.
That's a whole different level of Light Brighting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brett from Brown Deer listening on WAUK. If I could buy myself a toy, it would be the slot car racing set.
Oh, I know what he's talking about. Yeah. I know. If I'm not mistaken, you put together the pieces of a race set.
Okay.
And then you have cars that are magnetized, and then you have a little, like a little gun thing.
Ooh.
And you press the button and it just goes fast and it goes right.
It goes around the loop goes around the track.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Half the fun was putting it together. That's where the whole thing's like, put slot A into hole B and blah, blah, blah. And then watch your father get really mad at your mom for not helping and blah, blah, blah.
Numerous fun abounds.
Exactly.
Liz from Saukville listening on WAUK Masterpiece. I learned a lot about famous paintings. I don't know that game.
Wow, I didn't grow up friends like you.
Masterpiece. Another texter says, I love Light Bright personally. My sister still has one.
Nice. I saw one come up through the texts before that was, let's see here. So I apologize for this. Someone texted an earlier in the show about it, and they said, nope, it's gone. It's absolutely gone. But Miss RDT on the live stream says, paper dolls and Jax were my life as a child.
Paper dolls.
Is that the one where you take, like, you cut out the doll shape and then you take...
And they had the little tabs.
Yes, okay.
And you put the outfits. Yes, paper dolls were huge.
Could you imagine handing a paper doll book to a
kid?
Not to a five-year-old would love it, but like to an 11-year-old. Be like, here, play with that. Play with that.
It might be so novel now, though.
You're right.
It might be interesting. It's retro.
I can already picture what a parent who does that looks like. Their name is like Hawthorne, and he has a big mustache and says, we're going to do this while listening to jazz only on vinyl.
I love it. Favorite toys. Favorite toys. Toys you loved as a kid that you wish you were that were still around. Do you have kids or grandkids? What do they play with that is not technology?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
board
exactly.
Games, other things, 855-752-4842. Penny, listening on WAUK, says, go fish and Old Maid.
Oh, God, Uno. I love playing. I can get real competitive in a game of Uno.
Do they even make Old Maid cards anymore?
Oh, I'm sure they, much like paper because doll books.
It's not socially acceptable anymore.
Oh yeah, you're right.
To be an old maid.
That's true. Now
there would be single by choice cards.
I got you this new game called Communist Feminist. Yeah, there you go.
Caravan Rider.
Tony on the live stream says, my four-year-old loves her dolls. The 4 and 5-year-old both love stuffed animals and they could color all day. That's the thing is, like, I am not one of these people who says kids shouldn't have technology. They shouldn't have phones. They'd be like, no, that's do what you want. If they don't like it, they don't like it. But I love seeing kids who still just like dive into books or color or do those things that are, it's not no money fun, but it's like, I can go to the store and spend $25 and buy a bunch of games and whatever. And the kid is absolutely entertained.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Toys you miss, toys you would love to see come back. What do your grandkids and kids play with that aren't technology? Mm-hmm. Casper, listening on WAUK, says cribbage. Cribbage is a great game. Teaches math.
It teaches. Oh, it's also high pressure math.
Well, you got to play with people who aren't quite that competitive.
And patient, because if you miss points.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
it's one of the reasons why I don't play cribbage, because I miss points and I feel bad.
People yell at you.
Yeah.
855-752-4842. Ollie joining us. Ollie, you get the last word before we go to the break. Favorite toys?
Well, we used to play with regular cards, play war or fight.
War, yes.
And Parcheesi and the Chinese checkers. But our favorite thing this time of year was the Sears and Roebuck catalog.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Look and look and look through it.
Yes.
And dream and dream and dream, knowing we weren't going to get anything anyway. But then we would take the our paper doll, and we would take the catalog and cut fashions from the catalog and make new fashions for our paper
Very
doll.
Nice.
That's fantastic.
Ollie.
Thank you. Calvin, chime in. We forgot to get to Calvin. I apologize. He says, Hungry, Hungry Hippos, Don't Break the Ice, and Cooties. Those are all games I grew up with, too.
Forgot about
I
Cooties.
I love it.
Thank you, everybody. That was so much fun. We're going to wrap things up when we return with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, it's just the That's Revolting edition. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Mayer on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Mock, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We were talking right before the break about toys that we played with as kids, toys that we miss, toys that we would like to see come back. A couple of texts I wanted to get to. Roger and Steven's point. I enjoyed Matchbox cars. My aunt made me a map that I could drive the cars on. That's cool.
That's amazing.
My brother had a whole bunch of Matchbox cars.
I had a case of Matchbox cars.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I'm trying to think of what else I had. Yeah, I had that. He-Man had some Star Wars stuff, collections, G.I. Joe for a moment. But yeah, I remember how
you were probably on the real tail end of G.I. Joe as a kid.
No.
Oh, really?
Because G.I. Joe was really popular in the 80s with the cartoon. And the small, because like the original G.I. Joes were like a foot tall. We got the tiny little ones that,
okay.
No, it's.
Because my brother had the big one and his feet turned around backwards. It was really
with the
cool.
Kung Fu grip.
Barbies did not do that.
It was one of ha ha.
I know. G.I. Joe had that too. Roddy from Horicon, listening on WCFW, said, I loved Color Forms and Battleship. Battleship was a game we played at our house.
Battleship was fun. I did like that game. I'm trying to think. Like, there was Electronic Battleship because, you know.
Oh, that was way advanced.
Why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good game. But I still love Uno. Still love Uno.
No, really. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'm trying, I cannot remember the name of it, but my brother doesn't remember. It was a compressor of some kind where you poured in wax and then you put the form down and it would heat it into like a little car, plastic figurines and stuff. That thing heated up to the surface of the sun.
That's like the
thing. It's amazing that we never burned down the house with that thing or gave ourselves third degree burns. I think it was called a compressor. If that rings a bell with you, I would love to hear from you. But I've been trying to think about what that thing was called for the longest time.
I think of that machine at the zoo that does the same thing, only you can't touch anything.
You only can't touch it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had it out in the family room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was crazy. Okay, Calvin, it's 10:55. It's getting late. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever find a thing you think this should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays. JaneSays@civicmedia.us. This from the New York Post, that bastion of journalistic credibility. Brooke Steinberg has the byline, Kraft's bizarre new mac and cheese flavor is inspired by Thanksgiving, but fans aren't so thankful. For the fall is the time of year when we love to indulge in comfort food. Kraft has come out with two new favorites to create a unique meal. Kraft is out with the apple pie flavored Kraft mac and cheese, combining two of the most iconic Thanksgiving dishes to create a sweet and savory concoction. Kraft's apple pie flavor satisfies the flavor trend that feels both familiar and adventurous.
Don't read it like that.
I'm just reading.
Don't read it with zest in life. Don't read it like you're going to eat it. My God, this is disgusting.
This contains the creamy cheese with cinnamon and tart green apple notes. May seem odd to sell a sweet-flavored mac and cheese, not new. In many regions of the Americas, as well as Canada and the UK, people traditionally top their slice of apple pie with a slice of cheese. Well, yes, that is an entirely different thing. Putting a slice of cheese on your apple pie is not mac and cheese apple-flavored.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
That's a food crime.
Do not... We were speaking to Liz Pancotti earlier in the show in the last hour. Again, that's comparing apples to oranges. Download the first episode and listen to it on civicmedia.us. And honestly, maybe I wouldn't try that this year because I've never had apple pie and cheese, and I'm not against the idea.
Oh, it's yummy.
Yeah, I can understand why both flavors go together well, but this whole thing, like, you're not taking... Is it macaroni and cheese... An apple, or is it apple-flavored mac and cheese? So that's not it. So you're just taking the apple flavoring and throwing it on pasta. Disgusting.
That seems to be pretty much the consensus from the public. Fans not too thrilled about the Kraft mac and cheese apple pie flavor. Many declaring this invention should go straight to hell. One person said, quote, I love how they put while supplies last. Like these aren't going to end up on sale out of desperation to get rid of them. Another person replied, I'm pregnant and into eating weird stuff, so I'll take one for the team. I'll try it.
Well, and that goes back. We talked about this, too. The mac and cheese flavored ice cream that came out like last year.
So wrong.
It's all about shoulda, not coulda with these things. All right.
Yeah. And I think this one says it all. Person responding to the apple pie mac and cheese. Is this rage bait? Are you just trying to make us all angry? Is that what this is?
when asked for comment from a priest, if there is a God, he said, this is not what he intended with us.
That's exactly not.
It is just, I mean, there it's is wrong. No version where I eat this. And there's no version where I'm happy someone brings it to Thanksgiving, even as like, I'll try it. No.
That wraps up today's episode of...
This shouldn't be a thing.
Thank you, Craig and Calvin and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media, because without you, nothing works. And thank you, traffic. You guys are saints.
Yes.
And thank you most of all for calling and texting and watching on the stream and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy and you have the chance to share it. Join us tomorrow. We will be live from 9 until 11. Be safe on the roads.
Yes.
Have a very, very happy Thanksgiving. And keep it right here. We have news coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you in the morning.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.